ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by David Pollack and Reese Davis.
The 41-year drought is over, and what's next for the college football playoff? I have answers, although I'm not sure I can get the right people to listen to me, but I'm going to start trying right now. This is the ESPN College Football Podcast for Wednesday, January 12th. Reese Davis and David Pollack with you for a final turn the page session, though on Wednesday rather than Tuesday. 41 years in the making, and Georgia is national champions once again. And because we like to go behind the curtain here, David, there were moments late in that game. You and I were standing on the sideline. I was waiting to do the trophy presentation, and you said something to me that I'll probably never forget hearing a former player say, "My heart is beating like it hasn't beaten since I was a player." Why?
It was crazy. Like, I think as a Georgia fan, you watched them. We were standing right there, Reese, when the Stetson Bennett fumble happened. We saw it happen. Like, you, Reese, we about got hit with beer cans, right? They were chucking them on the field, and it was like, here we go again, right? Like, you've seen it. This is the negative part. And unfortunately for those people, by the way, they didn't get to see the turnaround because they acted like an idiot and got kicked out, I think. But you just – I was standing with Ben Watson, who played at Georgia. And, it was such a great, back-and-forth game. And you felt like every play you were holding on to it, and you were having fun. And so it was cool. It was very, very cool. I'll tell you what, the honorary captain thing was cool, Reese, because – I haven't, we do all these games and we go all over the place, but I don't get to get really close to the players before a game. And I just forgot what that looked like. Like Will Anderson just mean mugging, like pissed off. You could tell. I forgot about the psychological warfare when you walk out for the kick. You know, Zeus was mean mugging, and you could just see and you could feel it. Like it was so, So much animosity, so much like, oh yeah, here we go. This is for all the marbles. Like I literally was about to grab my pads. Like let's ride it out, bro. Let's hit somebody. And then I looked at Evan Neal and I was like, good God, is that a human being? But that's okay. But it was crazy, man. It was nuts. Me and you got to watch it on the sidelines, probably the best seat in the house. And it was crazy. It was, if you talk about 41 years for Georgia, I remember after the Keeley Ringo, pick six, which you called, by the way. He absolutely called it before it happened. After that pick six, I walked down the Georgia sideline, and obviously I know a lot of those people, like, and the fans in the crowd. And Reese started this off, and I think this is a good way to punctuate the question, is it's been 41 years, and he said that. And I bet you 4 out of 10, Reese, of the people that I walked by, all the people in the front row, in the front three rows of the crowd, were absolutely bawling. Like grown man tears, like tears of joy because of like, holy cow, this might actually happen.
Why do you think, and this is almost like a more of a psychological podcast, and I have my theories on this. You don't see that in any other sport.
No.
You don't. I mean, I love college basketball. I'm not going to lie. My love for college football runs deeper, but you don't see that in college basketball. You don't see it in the NFL. Maybe because I'm not a huge fan of international soccer, maybe you see it a little bit sometimes with European soccer, maybe some World Cup things. Why? Why do you think that is?
First of all, you covered soccer this past year.
I did, but I'm not going to claim to be an expert on.
I know,
on
but I think the, you should cover on it again.
Psychological aspects of it,
I'm going to vouch for you. You should cover that again, Reese. That's amazing. here's why to me. So many of my friends that were there, Reese, their dad's there. Mm-hmm. They're there. Their son's there. Like, it's not just a fandom. It's a family affair. You tailgate, my buddy, that was my buddy, Drew Pilgrim, his son's there, Claxton, and, they're his son and his daughter are tearing up. His son's 15, his daughter's, 11. I had my buddy Drew, Phil Nichols there with his wife, with his two daughters, with their husband, with their spouse. Like, it's a family affair, man. You it's something that, you know, you travel to all the games. It's something you support. It's something that runs deep, but it's something that is passed down. That love is passed down from generation to generation to generation. And it's crazy because a lot of times you see that kind of subside and go away a little bit, but you know, it's something to do every Saturday in the fall. It's trips to take. It's fun to have. That's what I think. What do you think?
I think that's a lot of it. I think it is the connection with family. I think because it's not just a football team, that may be the galvanizing factor for, you know, Georgia or Alabama or whoever it might be. That might be the thing that draws you together on Saturday, whether it's on campus or around the television, or even if you're just texting back and forth with people as you watch the game. That's the galvanizing factor, but there are other life events that are connected to that university or that time in your life that remain special to you. And I'll tell you another thing that really struck me, David, in the aftermath. One was watching you and Ben Watson on the sideline. But after going back home on Tuesday, I ran into Marcell Dareus, who played at Alabama, was on the first national championship team that Nick Saban had the great play for a touchdown against Texas. And Marcell, you know, made a lot of money in the NFL, was a great NFL player. And I will confess, he may still be playing. I'm not positive, but that's neither here nor there. Marcell's not going to go back and watch a Buffalo Bills game. Now, if they go to the Super Bowl, he might go to the Super Bowl, but he's not going to go back with the same type of connection that he goes back to an Alabama championship game with. He's not going to go watch the Jacksonville Jaguars if the Jags ever made it to a Super Bowl, which seems unfathomable right now, but I digress. And while the NFL might be TV king, and the NFL might run the show, the NFL doesn't have that on college football, and it never will. And while I respect the players' right, and they should aspire to play in the NFL and play professional sports, whatever it might be, never take for granted whether you're there 3 years, 4 years, or 6 years. You won't appreciate, I don't think, you can speak to this better than I, this is from observation, you will not appreciate that time until you're gone. And even, you know, I'm sure you would have rather won a national championship in 2002 or 2004 than in 2021, but I'm not sure it would have been that much more meaningful, maybe a little, but I mean, that connection that you had with winning that game Monday night is special. And the players who are in the middle of it right now, man, if somehow, now I'm not saying change anything about when they stay or go, but if they could really be able to be where their feet are and soak this up, and instead of resenting some of the critique and criticism they get from the fans, which is understandable because we get it in our business, we don't like it either, but maybe take a step back and go, the reason they do that is because they care so much. And there's something special about somebody caring so much about what you do.
Well, and here's to put a stamp on that. And I agree to put a visual stamp on it from the other night. Nick Chubb flies up and gives me a big old hug. Roquan Smith, who's there, flies up and gives me, you know, a big old hug. And it just, you know, the amount of it, you can't, like, I remember talking to Nick before the SEC championship game. And I'm like, I said, Cleveland's got great fans, doesn't it? I said, but it ain't Georgia, is it? And he was like, absolutely not. He was just like, there's nothing like the college atmosphere. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to kind of see it while I was in it, because I stayed for my senior year, even though I was projected to be a first round pick, because, man, I wanted to enjoy being a kid another year. Like, I knew the NFL was coming, and I knew it was going to be a business. It does. It becomes, you know, 24/7, you know, seven to seven at night. And, you know, it's a grind, and it's a business, and it's just, but it's not the level of passion. It's not the level of love. And it's just a different, and listen, I didn't last long in the NFL either. I'm not going to pretend like I had a, you know, luxurious career. But it's just different. And those fans are a lot of the reason. And yeah, you get, you get the negative that comes with that too. But there's always going to be the small majority or minority in anything that you do that you can let try to persuade you, and you just got to tune those dudes out.
You know what? I think most everyone listening to this knows that you would have had a long NFL career if not for the injury. But you know how you would have had an even longer NFL career? If you were still frustrated waiting on the national championship because you were Georgia Tech alum and you had become an H-back and a tight end like George O'Leary wanted you to. Because when I watch Alabama's Cameron Latu, who has really made a remarkable transformation, I think, man, he's good now, but he ain't what Pollock would have been if Pollock had been.
Yeah, some people are cockroaches. Some people are ants, you know.
I won't digress too far. We probably told this story on the podcast before. The reason I bring that up, Dave and I were doing a game when George was at UCF, and George told David that if you'd listened to me, you'd still be an H-back in the NFL or whatever he said. And Pollock came out of that meeting steaming. And I remember telling him he was paying you a compliment. He wasn't bashing you. He wasn't saying you weren't great at what you did. He was complimenting your athleticism.
Yeah, George O'Leary, he actually recruited me to Georgia Tech as an H-back. And hey, you know who else? You know who was my main point of contact recruiter?
Who's that?
Bill O'Brien.
Was he really?
Bill O'Brien recruited me to Georgia Tech.
You think that they sent Bill O'Brien a bill for the property damage he caused in the coach's box when Jaleel Billingsley sort of maybe perhaps didn't fight through some fight through on a route when the way Bill might have preferred he do?
He was a little mad. I tell you what, we're just not used to seeing that from Alabama players, and he's in the portal too. So that kind of gives you an idea of, you know, Billingsley before the season, Coach Saban called him out, and he listen, Coach, what about the job Coach did with this roster? I mean, I think, you know, I don't want to be like everybody else and say this is the best, you know, the best job he's done, but man, I'm going to put it up there because, yeah, we were talking about this leading up to the game. They had the upper echelon talent for sure, but the rest of the roster is so young and so inexperienced and, you know, not up to the level that we saw a year ago where we've seen, you know, several times throughout Alabama. But just Saban addressing Will Anderson and Bryce Young before they leave, like both of them upset, you can tell, you know, not happy. And he puts his arms out and he says, hang on, guys, you know, and basically says, thank you, you know, for all of your work, for getting us here. And, you know, I just don't know that there's ever going to be another guy that has the respect, the command, the pulse, the fire, the desire, the adaptability. Like, it's just, there's so many adjectives we could throw his way. But, you know, the bottom line is, you want to talk about, you know, the GOAT. He is the greatest coach in any sport to me of all time.
You know, I don't know. Did you get a chance to see the interview I did with Kirby Tuesday morning?
Yes, I did. Yes, sir.
You know, one of the things that struck me about that, Dave, and I don't know, I haven't seen the edited version. Obviously, I just did the entire sit down. There has been, and you know, both guys are probably going to send messages and be mad at me about this a little bit, but I'm going to say it anyway because that's what we do here. There's been some tension there. Whether it is totally about the fact that they've both been at the upper echelon of the sport, whether it's about second and 26, whether it's about recruiting, whatever. Both have been professional about it. You can feel it. You can feel it. And that, the two things that happened once, I mean, Kirby talked pretty openly about really having a greater understanding now and kind of appreciating the relationship a little bit more. And I think that maybe Nick maybe has really started to, not that he hasn't always, but really started to understand that you can foster those relationships and still maintain that high level of competition. It's, I don't know, man. Somehow, some way, those two games, the SEC championship, the national championship game, that might have really almost brought the relationship to a better place somehow. I'm not saying, and don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm not saying it was bad. Yeah. I'm just saying that there, you know, there was something that, and look, they're still going to compete. Don't misunderstand. Those two guys are going to compete. But, you know, I think, I think the way Nick handled himself, I think the graciousness that Kirby showed, it felt different. I'm just going to say it felt different than it has the last few years.
Can you imagine being Kirby or being Nick and putting yourself in those shoes? And just for me personally, I don't know coaching etiquette. I actually asked Luke Fickell about this in the green room behind between shows at one point. I'm like, I'm trying to figure out how you do this. Like how you, like I'm supposed to, everything I do attacks your style of life, Reese. Like everything I do, if I'm Kirby, is trying to beat him. Mm-hmm. Everything I worked with him is trying to beat him. Like he's the face that haunts my dreams. Like as competitive as I am, I don't know how I'd turn it off. I was never great. Now listen, as I've gotten older and aged, I've gotten better with being able to handle my competitiveness, but like, I mean, it's hard. It is hard to want something so bad. Both of those guys, to you want X, you want Y. And you've got to go through them, but remember, you got to recruit against them every day and you got to hear about, you know, Georgia's always grinding. So I got to grind and I got to outdo Georgia. Georgia's got to outdo me. Like everything I do is to prepare to beat you. So I just don't know how I have a great relationship with somebody like that. Let's put it this way. I haven't mastered that in my life. The people that I compete the most with, I don't want to like that much. I don't want to be friends with. Like, well, it's hard.
I don't think those two are going to do that. Not now. I think that part of it's going to stay the same. I don't even know if either of them would actually admit fully to that. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's just a perception that I've had about it, but it felt a little different now. But I think that, once all the platitudes were over and, I asked Kirby, I said, you've been around, you've seen what it's like the day after. How are you going to handle the day after? He was going to enjoy it, but he's already back to work. You know, whether it's working the portal, whether it is working to keep some of his own guys out of the portal, or to say maybe you should go in there, or the question I asked him that he did not have an answer for, the Stetson Bennett question. Stetson Bennett has eligibility left. He's a national championship winning quarterback. He had, as revered as Buck Ballou is for winning the 1980 title, Buck was 1-for-13 in the championship game, and Stetson most definitely was not. Do you walk out on a high note because you sense that it's not going to get better and that they're going to again challenge you on the depth chart? Or do you say, I've one more year to play, probably not going to play in the NFL, and I'm going to come back and try to author another chapter to this remarkable story?
Well, and he's 23 years old. You know, he's not a young kid that's going through college. You know, he's been around for obviously a long time. He's deciding whether he wants to go to law school or not now. Like he's past the honeymoon underground phase or undergrad phase. But I was going to say this too, when you were talking about Stetson.
Wait. Can I interrupt you and say one thing? He's going to law school.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the business he's going to get if he winds up on all the stations in Atlanta? I say, if you've been injured in an accident, call Stetson Bennett IV. he will make your wildest dreams come true.
I thought you were going somewhere else with that. But I'm pretty sure Stetson Bennett's going to be able to do whatever the heck he wants to do, Reese. I'm pretty positive there's not going to be an avenue that Stetson Bennett, can't succeed in and just be like, walk in and go, I'm Stetson. Hi, how you doing? But I want to give you props on this. There was a lot of talk, the last year and a half with Stetson, and then I had to answer questions. I'm not going to name names of other guys like Kevin DeGondi or Booger, any of those guys. I'm not going to name names and throw them out there, but a lot of talk. Repeatedly from all of these people that work at our company. Now, and the list goes on and on. You know, that kid can't do it. He's not, he can't, that guy can't win a national title. you believed in him last year, Reese. Like, you, what did you see? Why did you believe in him?
It wasn't, everybody says defeat. It wasn't defeat. It was, I know he doesn't have, you know, a John Elway arm and Andrew Luck type delivery or whatever. I like the way he threw the ball, David. I like the way that he was unafraid. Sometimes it got him in trouble, but I felt like he saw it. I felt like he threw with anticipation. Yes, he made mistakes occasionally, but that was sort of part of the gunslinger thing about him. I thought he was good. You know, I looked at him to play. Now, do I think he's, you know, a Heisman Trophy winner? Do I think he's a, you know, top three round NFL pick? I don't. Do I think he's a really, really good college quarterback? Yes. And I thought it was the gunslinger. I thought he had a good arm, much better arm than people thought. And obviously it was an added bonus watching him that he could move. And if he takes off, he's fast, you know? So I just liked him. I thought he was good. You know, there are guys sometimes you watch, you just don't feel the same way about. And there, you know, a lot of guys that other people wanted to play that I kind of felt that way about. Well, maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong about a guy there. You know, I mean, I don't feel the same about JT Daniels. I thought Stetson was better than him. For JT's sake, wherever is next for him, I hope he proves me wrong and has a great, you know, finish to his career, wherever that is. I thought Stetson was better than him. That's just the way I saw it.
Well, you were in a crowd of not many saying that. But you look at, and by the way, Orange Bowl, confetti falling, all in Reese's hair, by the way. He was doing the post game with all his hair, messing up his beautiful coiffure or whatever you call that thing.
Coiffure. That's a good, Dave.
That's good. Okay, that's a good thing. It's fallen and everybody's celebrating. And then Todd Monken's, you know, he just ended up being standing right next to me. And I was, you know, kind of staying out of the way. And I was like, good Lord. I said, he just finds a way, doesn't he? And Todd Monken's comment was, I don't know how. And he said, we've literally beat him to crap. He was like, we didn't give him reps in fall camp, Reese. Mm-hmm. We had JT Daniel, we had Carson Beck and Vandergriff. That's five-star, four-star, five-star. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the guys that were getting the reps in camp. And what happens? JT gets hurt, and then it becomes as a coach, and this is where you got to give, obviously, Kirby a lot of credit. Then it becomes as a coach, and you can put yourself in his shoes. Like, wait a minute. I got an elite defense. This is where I'm at. Who do I trust? Who can I depend on? And that's when you go, that guy's been here. That guy does it. I saw him do it a year ago. You know, he'd be a good fill-in for JT. I remember, you know, people talking about the debate before. It was actually a debate before, you know, there was a lot of internal love for Stetson before JT even had the injury that people were buying into him. But then he comes in and repeatedly we're doing the same questions all throughout the year. Bro, I was on Get Up before the Orange Bowl. And, you know, I got sick and tired of answering these questions and it was pissing mm-hmm. me off. Like, I was just so, I'm like, are you watching the same games I'm watching? Like, I got to the point by the end of the season, I was just like, if the kid wasn't a walk-on, we're not having this discussion.
That's exactly literally, right.
He had a 20-3 touchdown to interception ratio going into the postseason this year. 20-3. And we're answering questions. How long should they stick with him? I'm like, what are you seeing that I'm not, besides the kid's tiny and the kid did not travel there with all the respect in the world and come in with all the respect in the world. But you know what you can't replace? You can't replace heart, but you can't replace somebody who loves where they're at. It's hard to find people that love what they do, that love, listen, to check the clock. Everything gets exhausting. Our job gets exhausting. And it's really hard to find people in our job and in your job where whoever's listening, when they take their card and they punch in, bro, they're all in. They're in it. They love it. Stetson Bennett has loved the University of Georgia since he was 2 years old. He's dreamed about putting on the silver britches and the red and black. Like, he loves it. He cares about it. Like, I think that makes up for some of those shortcomings that we could go through that he necessarily doesn't have, because he's going to make sure, because it matters so much to him. He's going to prepare and he's going to do X and he's going to do Y. And then, you know, whenever you needed him the most too, I think, and you've spent time with him, he's also the definition of a flatliner. That guy ain't a, he's not, you know, we talk about Bryce Young all year in the matrix and stuff like that. This kid's a flatliner too. Like, there's not much that bothers him.
Yeah. He, right before we went up on the stage to go into the trophy, Stetson came up and he looked at me and I shook his hand and congratulated him. And he said, how about that? How about that indeed? Before we move on, two things I want to mention. Listen to Swagoo and Perk, Marcus Spears and Kendrick Perkins. They're talking some college football. They'll talk more about Stetson Bennett, an emotion they noticed from Nick Saban, and distinct feelings that they had after winning championships. New episodes every Tuesday, wherever you listen to podcasts, or you can watch the show on YouTube. And watch NBA Today, 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app, or you can listen to the show as a podcast. One thing that happened in Indianapolis that went under the radar because of the championship game, and rightfully so, was some of those backroom meetings, say backroom, they're scheduled meetings, but the meetings that were going on at the JW Marriott where we stayed about the future of the college football playoff. There are some rumblings that haven't been fully discussed that I'm going to bring up, because I'm going to start pounding the table right now, because these things need to be addressed and they need to be handled in the right way. I think it's really easy for those of us who are fans to say we need to expand or we need to do this or that. Whatever the number is, wherever the expansion goes, they are going to make a colossal, colossal error in judgment if they push the season deeper into January, which is what they're talking about doing now. That's the wrong way. You've got to pull it back into December if you expand. You've got to reduce the gap. People worry about the TV ratings. They worry about interest, about number of players being engaged in the postseason. The way to address all of that first is not foolproof. Reduce the gap backwards. Don't be pushing the season and the championship game deeper into January, closer to the Super Bowl. Other way, December is where you do it. I know finals. There are so many accommodations made, and I don't mean anything untoward, unfair, or cheating or anything of that nature academically. There are concessions made for athletes all the time. For the small number of players who have classes and finals and papers, concessions, that makes it sound like they're making it easier. Accommodations to allow them to complete their academic work can be made. December is the way to go. Semifinals, New Year's Day, and then you got to figure out if Monday night's the best night for the championship game. You can figure that out. New Year's Day semis, December is the way to go. Reduce the gap. Agreed? What they're talking about doing, I'm told, is, you know, maybe the quarterfinals or something, New Year's Day, and then more and more. No, wrong way. Other way is the way. That's my biggest point. I should have just said it that quickly, and I wouldn't have made you get bored and forget what we were talking about.
Well, no, that's too many shots to the head. That sounds real. Hey, haven't we been, 2 years too online courses that are really like they've learned how to do this now. Like we know how to take tests virtually. We know how to we can. That's what I mean. That's what I think you mean too, by accommodate. Like it doesn't have to be
right.
The Kobe Dean was at my golf tournament this year, literally taking a final exam on his computer.
Like, yes, this is what I'm talking about.
We can get that figured out. I think the biggest thing too is, you know, we got to figure out the number of games. Like that's got to be a priority, so we don't, and again, that leads to what you're saying too, so we don't linger on for months and months and months and continue to go on. You know what I'm really interested to find is, obviously the Alliance are really interested to see, the Alliance wants to expand. Like that's, but it's going to be a give and take, and it's going to be a back and forth, because, you know, by forming the Alliance, I think, I think it's a way of trying to maybe you think you have more control over this than the other than the other region. Like, oh, we formed an alliance so we can decide how this happens. I don't think it's going to work like that. I think it's going to take everybody working together. I don't think it's going to take one side dominating this. And that's the struggle for power that I think is going to be, it's going to make this incredibly hard to get done, Reese.
Well, and the alliance, I'm sure most of the Big Ten, Pac-12, ACC, in response to the SEC expanding and Texas and Oklahoma joining there. I've sort of made fun of the alliance. It sounds silly. In all honesty, all the things that the alliance has said up to this point that they were about, they could have been doing without putting an alliance tag on their efforts. You can schedule however you want to. You can work cooperatively, academically, any way you want to through your universities. You know, doing this is somehow some virtuous stand in the playoff. To me, is sort of grandstanding and posturing and much ado about nothing. But, you know, if they are working in unity to try to force a certain a certain playoff, I mean, they're not going to win that battle. So how about if everybody decides what might be good collectively for the sport? And there's not going to be unanimity in what that is. There are plenty of people who think that what I just said, that you have to do it in December if you're going to, or you should. You don't have to, but you should. There are plenty of people who would disagree with that number of reasons. But start there. Start there to try to say what's best for the sport collectively for the business model. I'll tell you something else they should do, David. When they restructure this and we are in an era of name, image, and likeness, what in the world is wrong with coming up with a playoff share for like they do in the NFL? You know, some of this newfound revenue when the new system comes into play, whether that's before 2025 or after the expiration of the initial 12-year contract, when this comes into play, you brought up number of games. Well, let's attach some significance to it. And I'm not just talking about to try to keep players from opting out. I'm saying because it's probably the right thing to do. And there's a little something to it. I mean, you give a playoff share to the people involved, and bigger share the further you go along, and the biggest share if you win the whole thing. There's enough money to do it if you want to. You know, don't tell me there's not enough money. There's enough money to allocate it in any number of ways, and you can certainly do that. And they should.
Yeah. What does the at this point where we're at, and I'm being honest, I'm not being sarcastic. What is the NCAA's role in sports right now?
In sports or in football?
How about football? Let's go football.
Not much. Honestly, not much.
And how much money do you think is being made yearly at the NCAA?
Well, they make all their money from the basketball tournament. They don't really make anything on football.
Well, I'm thinking at some point, if this kind of stuff really wants to continue to grow and get done like you just talked about, I don't think that's what the NCAA. I think that's taking power upon yourself. And I think the players, by the way, need some form of player association if you're going to do that. Like, and I know everybody hears that and they kind of shudder and they're like, wait a minute, NFL. I think you could still take care of this and not make it the NFL. Like, I think you can protect that because it's not the NFL.
Yeah. And really, David, I think that power structure already exists. It's the conferences and the commissioners of the conferences, then, and the people in the College Football Playoff Committee who were meeting in Indianapolis. The problem is there's no unified direction within that group, and giving up power is a tough thing to do. I mean, and I know this is going to make people on the outside mad, but the guy who has stepped forward and has done a really good job, in my judgment, from the outside of protecting his conference's interest, because that's his job, but also operating from a perspective of trying to go forward for what's good for the game, is Sankey. Now, you know, I'm a little slower on the commissioner idea than a lot of people are. A lot of people say, well, we need a commissioner. I'm a little slower on that. But, you know, I do think there has to be leadership. And I think Greg has exhibited a lot of that. And there are other strong commissioners, too. I've got high regard for all of them. I think Jim Phillips is a really smart, forward thinking guy with the ACC. And, you know, I've been impressed with other aspects of the other guys, too, with Kevin Warren, George Kliavkov, who's new to the Pac-12 and I think brings some outside ideas. And I know we're going way down into the weeds here. But Sankey has been the guy, to me, who has navigated that balance pretty well. Look, people say, he only cares about the SEC. Hey, that's his job. He's the SEC commissioner. But he's done that and still, in these playoff talks, operated from a perspective of what's good for the sport, I think. It seems to me, anyway. That's my judgment of the situation.
And if you want to know the truth behind closed doors and the truth, just the overall truth of why Oklahoma and Texas is in the SEC, it's because of Sankey. That's the exact – it's because of his leadership. Like, they, you know, he didn't go
– To be clear, you're not talking about he went out and recruited them. You're talking about what he's done and they see it, right? Is
correct.
That what you –
Yeah. He didn't go out and recruit them. They came to him. Like, yeah. They saw how he handled himself in a global pandemic and how he led his, you know, his group and his people and what he said and what he did. And they're like, dude, like, he's got something about him. I think you would agree too. Jim Delaney did a heck of a job.
Absolutely.
He was freaking unbelievable. Another guy that showed tremendous leadership. It didn't matter. He was in the Big Ten. He was just a stud. You talk to him for like 5 minutes. You're like, Yeah, absolutely. Let's go.
Jim has that effect on people. Yes.
Yes. I mean, so I think that, you know, I don't think it matters where you're from. I think it matters about getting the right guy. But I think you're the one who said a while back that said getting people to forfeit power and money. Mm-hmm. Those are incredibly difficult things to do. And there's a lot of power and there's a lot of money that has to come together and do this as opposed to, wait a minute, I got my own little thing over here and it's working.
And you know, I think the other thing, David, when it comes to, say, sharing money with players, not just because of the old school, you know, antiquated, never really truly existed amateurism, you know, ideal. It's not that. And I don't even think it's a nefarious thing of I don't want those players to have any money. It's sort of like when you're doing your household budget or whatever it is you're going to do. You go, wait, but I'm used to this. You know, I'm used to spending this money in this area. You mean I've got to sacrifice in this area? I don't know. Can we really give that up? Is there any way we can come up with like more money, you know, to be able to pay for this thing that we need to do instead of me having to give something up? You know, so I think that's where a lot of the people are when it would come to the idea that I put forth about revenue sharing from the playoff with the players. It's not that they're saying, well, we can't do that because that's evil and wrong. It's because... I have plans 10 years down the road for this money. What am I going to do? You know, and you may have to sacrifice some of that. You may have to reorganize. You may have to take some out of the, you know, whatever the vacation budget or whatever it might be in order to fix the roof on the house. You know, maybe you may have to do that and they may have to do some of that as well. So it'll be interesting. I hope they do the right thing. You know, I saw somebody, you know, that mentioned the lowest ratings in a number of years for a championship game. They got to get this fixed. I don't think expansion necessarily gets this fixed. If you push this on deeper into January and you get the season farther and farther removed from the teams who aren't in the playoff and as popular as the NFL is and as defined as the playoff picture in the NFL is, and you push that deeper and you're going against them and you're getting closer to the Super Bowl and closer to All-Star Weekend and any other thing, and you create more competition, that's not going to help that aspect of it. What's going to help? There's a little bit of a vacuum in December. College football's at its zenith leading into that selection day when the four teams are announced. And if you expand it, that will still be the zenith. And if you play quicker, you know, rather than that long break, then, you know, what was the break between the two Alabama Georgia games? 37 days?
Yeah, 37.
Is that right? They played one game, you know, between those two games. So, you know, I think that needs to be adjusted.
Yeah. Well, all this stuff is, part of it, and it's the messy stuff, that, but it's the stuff that also changes the direction of the sport, because the sport has changed and you're going to have to change with it.
All right, let's go back to the fun stuff now. You live in the greater Athens area. When's the parade? When's the celebration?
I think they said it's Saturday.
Are you the grand marshal since you were the honorary captain?
I don't think so. I haven't talked to anybody about anything, so I don't think so. But I do know that the Athens, they'll turn out. I think it'll be pretty exciting. There'll be a lot of people there. Listen, Atlanta. I mean, are the Falcons going to win the Super Bowl next year? I think so. I think they're going to
Braves, Georgia. It's all over, right?
The curse. You know, the soccer team won in 18, and then you got the Braves who take care of business. And I mean, my goodness, like, is this title town or is that's sarcasm? That's fun. But, it is fun. It's fun. It's enjoyable, man. It's crazy. I think it's good for the sport too, man. You got, you know, three different winners in 3 years, you know, which is not a bad thing for college football.
Well, but again, it does speak to trying to keep up with the SEC, though, because those three winners in 3 years, LSU, Alabama, Georgia, and then you go the year before that, it's Clemson, which is, you know, everything except their conference patch on their jersey. They're an SEC team. You know, they've got the ACC patch, but they've got a lot in their DNA that's very similar to those.
So you got to spew that SEC bias, Reese. Come on. And like, no. It is crazy that he has to do it. I'm sorry that Senator Davis does that, because you know what? Here's the deal. Me and Senator Davis will be at the draft, and I might let my hair and my beard grow out, by the way, till that point. We'll be at the draft.
And hair, Reese, yes, beard, no.
Reese's SEC bias is going to be so big that he's going to control those 20 or 25 of the 32 first-round picks that are from the SEC. That's totally your fault.
Is that my fault? Is it all hype?
Absolutely manufactured. It's 100% your fault.
David, congratulations on the championship. Those dogs hunkered.
By the way, hold on one second. Congratulations, Reese. Next time we do this, I will have fiber.
Are you serious? Internet. Like real internet?
Real internet. In like 60 days, right out there where I'm pointing. You can't see it at home, but it's amazing because I'm pointing right down the street. We're gonna throw some fire up, baby. So we won't have to. Y'all don't know this, but we redo the podcast about seven times. We have to take like seven breaks because my internet's so amazingly horrible. But we'll get that fixed. Maybe we'll do some draft stuff. That'd be fun.
Is that the result? Is that some kind of payout from Georgia winning the national championship that you're able to pay for the fiber now?
No, that is not. It is expensive though, but it's I'm gonna write it off, and I might even just send you the bill. So
I will not pay that bill. But speaking of looking for money to pay for things rather than actually having to come out of your pocket, that's your wheelhouse, man.
Hey, you know what? Some of us were raised a little more frugal than others, and it's a problem. I get it, and it's. But it ain't going anywhere. We've learned that over the years. So you just have to deal with it.
That might explain my issue too, because I always say we never went hungry, had everything we needed, but certainly not everything we wanted all the time. So yeah, I can be that way too a little bit. Oh, yeah. Man, congratulations. As I told you Monday night before I went up to the podium, very happy for you. I know how much it means to you, and I thought it was really cool to be able to see you celebrate with your squad and your university there to win the national championship. It was really cool.
Appreciate it, brother. Now we start talking about next year, right? Like, here we go. Who's number one? Alabama, right?
Alabama.
and we're back.
Here we go. But ending number one is the goal, and that's what Georgia did. And Georgia will be right there next year, I'm sure. Particularly watch and see what a little quarterback drama happens with the dogs over the next couple of weeks. And we'll see what happens there. All right, Davey, congratulations, my friend. Always fun this year. Maybe we'll talk some draft at some point if they talk us into it.
Yes, sir.